Today on Movie Wallace, we talk about Wonder Woman and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Hello, it's Yazdi.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
Hello. So we're going to spend a show talking about me, Wonder Woman.
Well,
half a show.
Half's good.
Half's good. The other
the good
one's...
half.
Yes, yes.
Hopefully, and hopefully I've got the sound, the technology right here. So if it's all screwed up, it's because Rashmi is in a hotel in Chicago for work. So we decided to just record anyway. We are desperate to talk about two of these films, well, one of them in particular. And we are also joined by our special guest, Gary.
Hi, everyone.
And
Gary, it's been a long time since you've been on the show. It's nice to have you back.
I know, they boycotted me for a while.
Well... yeah, when was the last
when
time?
Was the last time?
I know
what
we
movie
had you
was well, I liked the movie and you all hated it.
Those are the best episodes.
Which one?
Oh, it was the...
that one, remember?
I remember there was that Country Strong.
It was Country... Well,
oh, Country Strong. I liked it.
I hated that one.
Oh.
And then there was the other one. Who was
it a comic book movie? Because we... Well, you're here today.
It was, it was a fantasy about... going back in time.
Oh, God, it was Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage.
Season of the Witch.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes.
That was such a random episode for you to be on.
I have no recollection of that. I'm sorry, Gary.
I can't even remember what that movie was about.
Yeah.
I liked it. I remember liking that movie, and it was dumb as all hell.
Maybe I hadn't seen it.
But it was Nicolas Cage, so it was just awesome.
Season of the Witch.
I think it was called Season of the Witch.
Yes.
Okay. It was a good couple of years ago, though. Mm-hmm. So we've wheeled in Gary this week because Gary is a self-confessed, can I say this on public radio podcast?
Die hard.
DC comic universe nerd geek slash super fan, right?
That is me.
Okay. And so obviously with the DC Comics Wonder Woman, we're dying to talk about kind of this latest entry in the franchise. But before we go there, let's start with our... first movie of the week, which is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Lies. And so this is the latest entry in the Pirates of the Caribbean series. I think it's the fifth one.
Yes, it's the fifth one, yes.
And I think I was introing this one. Maybe I jumped in ahead of you, Yazdi.
That's fine.
It's the fifth movie. Oh, well, no. Wait, you've got your notes. I'm reading from IMDb.
No, that's fine.
Yazdi's all like doed here. He's like...
No.
He's prepared all his notes. So go ahead. Why don't you tell us about it?
So Pirates of the Caribbean. This is the fifth one. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4. Fifth one in the series. Do we need a fifth one? We'll talk about it. It's directed by Joaquin Roning and Espen Sandberg, both Norwegians. And I looked them up and... this is only their second movie, their first one in Hollywood. And the first movie that they made was the lovely movie that was nominated for Best Foreign Film not 2 years ago. It's called Kon-Tiki. I don't know if any of you watched it. It was about this expedition that happened, I think, in the late 60s out of Norwegian to prove a particular theory. It's a lovely movie. It's on Netflix if anybody wants to watch it.
Yeah, I remember. Was it nominated for Best Foreign Language Movie?
It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Movie, and then the documentary on which Kon-Tiki was based was nominated for Best Documentary the year before.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's quite fascinating. But anyway, Hollywood has handed over the reins of the fifth in the Pirates franchise over to these two young Norwegian directors, and the writers include Jeff Nathanson and Terry Rosio, as well as Ted Elliott, Stuart Beattie, and Jay Wolpert, who were all involved in generating the original characters. And we should, of course, acknowledge that Pirates of the Caribbean is based originally from a Disney ride, you know, at their amusement park. So this was the movie version of it.
Is this the first one that's not directed by Gore Verbinski? Because I know he's done a bunch of them.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of them. I don't know if that's the first one, but okay. Yeah, we can look it up.
I can't say I'm unhappy about that. He's not a director that I work well with at all.
I do like Gore Verbinski.
Ooh,
I love Gore Verbinski. But anyway, he made A Cure for Wellness earlier this year, which you should watch if you haven't seen it. But anyway, I digress too much.
It's bonkers, man. Don't save yourself the time. These two loved it.
It's so good.
I think they're just wrong.
So good.
So good. And the cast includes Johnny Depp yet again, along with Javier Bardem, this time playing the bad guy. And then the youngins in the cast is rounded up by British actor Brenton Thwaites and Kaya Scodelario. And then others, the usual players from the, you know, from the franchise out there, such as Jeffrey Rush and Ian McShane and others. So
I think you're the only one of us that saw this one yesterday.
No, I saw it too.
Oh, you did too?
Okay,
I was out of town. Where was I? I was at work somewhere, traveling.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to even try and summarize this film because it's a lot of gobbledygook about finding some trident, you know, of the Poseidon, the original trident, and a big quest to find this particular trident, and various people are behind it. So
lots of swashing and buckling.
Lots of swashing and buckling. Okay. So Rashmi, since you're the only other person in our merry group today which has seen it, tell us.
Ooh-ar is how I will start. Okay, so we always say a good movie unanimously reviews as a good movie unless it's Guardians of the Galaxy and you're Joe. And if it's not, and if you're, you know, and if it doesn't unanimously review well, then a lot of how you find a movie is your expectations going into this. So having said that, especially in this area of sequelitis and pre-sold franchises, I was dreading watching this movie. So I'm happy to say I was pleasantly surprised that I didn't hate it. But this is very much a rewrite of the first episode with fresh new faces and, of course, Johnny Depp being Johnny Depp and his shenanigans, some of which land and some which are just tired. Hate this movie, but I think they need to stop.
How do you feel about the rest of the franchise? Because I never wanted to watch them. And then we caught up, I think, by the time of the third or fourth one and really enjoyed all of them.
Right. One through three, I love, Joe. I mean, obviously, you know, you and I binge watched them before binge watching was a verb. And yeah, we came late to the party, but I think it should have stopped at three.
Okay.
Four for me was just terrible.
Yazdi.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to repeat some of what Rashmi's been saying. In fact, this one's called Dead Man Tell No Tales. The very first one was called Dead Man's Chest. And the word dead repeats twice. And it's really laid out in the footprint of the first one in that, you know, there is this young cast and there's the goofy captain and then there's a treasure thereafter and there's weird things happening. I, too, was not dreading it. I was just exhausted. I was like, really? Do we really need a fifth one? I was, you know, I kind of very grudgingly went in to see it. So again, on those terms, I think the movie is fairly proficient. It's not bad to look at. It's at every minute entertaining.
Okay.
It's not offensive. Like I never rolled my eyes or felt like, you know, why am I in the theater or that I should leave or any of those things. But it does beg the question, like, why is it there? Why does it exist? I mean, it's made well enough. I mean, you know, it has some incredible scenes, and we can talk more about it. But why, really? So if you're not going to bring anything more to this, just let it die. You know,
there's gracefully. No story that had to be told.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think, I mean, yes, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we went to a screening, and I kid you not, Gary and Joe, there were probably like 10 to 12 people who were dressed up in pirate costumes. Mm-hmm. This cinema was full of super fans. And they clapped at the end of the movie.
It's a very popular franchise. Gary, are you a fan of these movies at all? Have you seen any of them?
I think I stopped at the second one watching these. I just didn't see that. It didn't hold my interest. And it became too commercial, I thought. And
yeah.
I'm thinking probably this fifth one was more for the merchandising.
It feels very much like a Disney vehicle, and I guess it's betrayed by its origins, right? I mean, if you base a movie on a theme park ride, where can it go? I mean, it's not as if
Angry Birds 2.
Right. I loved Angry Birds.
The movie?
Oh.
I've not seen it.
Should I see it?
It was fun. It was, you know, you just have to be in the right mood to watch it.
I love the game. I was addicted to the game.
I think Pirates of the Caribbean has, I see it differently, Caribbean. But it has potential for character development if they invested time in writing. And but there's no continuity other than with a few main characters. But
so here's the good thing about this one. There is continuity. There's more story in this than there was in number four, I think, which it does feel like they made an effort to make a story. There was a reason for it. But there's no need for it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated the kind of themes. There are two main themes for me in this one that came through. One is kind of be who you are and stand up for what you believe in. And that foundation kind of plays throughout the whole movie and a lot of the characters. And then there's this theme of kind of, and it's more subtle, of absent parents, absent family.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means to be part of a family in some loose way. Mm. And I think there are some fairly imaginative set pieces that, again, you know, they're beautifully choreographed. There's a wonderful scene where Johnny Depp is about to be guillotined and the guillotine keeps spinning round and the blade keeps going up and down.
It's spinning around like vertically.
As he falls upside down and is about to get his head chopped off, the blade falls the other way. It's beautiful. But it just feels over choreographed. It's just overdone.
Is it a lark? And,
yeah. Sorry?
Is it a lark?
Yes.
Yeah, is it, totally. Is it,
these guys just mucking around on a film set.
Deeper.
Sorry?
I think it's trying to go deeper. And it doesn't quite succeed because I think at the end of the day, we're just reminded about the fact that this is episode 5.
Right.
Yeah.
And guys, there's a number 6 coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, these movies do really well. I mean, this movie's already taken $62 million. And I think that's, you know, it's cause and effect, right? I mean, the movie makes money. People go see it. We're going to get more of them. It's reviewed really badly. I think it's 29% on the Tomatometer for what worth. Yeah. Wow. Which I'm surprised.
But it's family friendly, right? It's a movie you can take your kids to.
Yeah.
Yes, most definitely. I mean, I think...
Yeah.
Go on.
No, and then I was going to say, the one thing I don't care for, though, is it felt like a very misogynistic film, even though one of the heroes is a woman. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to see Johnny Depp as an aging actor with this same costume, and now Javier Bardem is falling into the same trap. Mm-hmm. And that's annoying to me.
You stole the words. I mean, that's the first thing I wrote in my notes is, you know, poor Javier Bardem. I mean, he's reduced to this now. He's one of the better actors in the world. I mean, you know, he can do drama like the best of them. And he's now reduced to playing increasingly more flamboyant, ridiculous, over-the-top CGI. I mean, I actually got you know, he's supposed to be this half ghost kind of thing. And, you know, his half of his face is eaten away and his hair kind of moves in this weird slow motion. And he looked kind of freakish. It just looked it was very unkind to him as an actor, I think. I know it's all in the service of, you know, making a memorable bad guy, but he just came off looking like a circus show. I mean, I don't know. And then, and I felt the same way about Johnny Depp, although I have to say, I have no interest to watch another Johnny Depp movie now because he just doesn't do regular shtick anymore. All his stuff is so over the top.
Right.
But if I have to see him, I would rather see him in, you know, in a Pirates movie because he is kind of endearing and he's kind of, that's his groove. You know, he kind of fits in there very, very nicely. I just, you know, there's so much rough edges around that character, which I hinted at and kind of alluded to in all the movies, and they just never go out and kind of pursue them. So he kind of remains mainstream. So that's one of the other things. All of these large, you know, blockbuster summer movies, you know, they're all, you know, movie studio to death where everybody thinks about everything and you cannot offend this person and that person. So it all becomes so bland. I will say,
It's very vanilla.
I mean, I'll tell you that it has, what has stayed with me is it has some incredible action pieces. And I'm not one to normally talk about action pieces. The one that you talked about where he's about to be guillotined and the whole guillotine kind of is twirling around and the blade keeps coming close to him and doesn't, That's really good. And I think a continuation of that scene, or maybe, yeah, it's a continuation of a scene, is where this whole building, you know, they're trying to save him from the guillotine, but the guillotine is attached to the building and the people are trying to pull him off. And they drag the whole building with him. And it goes through this whole building is being dragged through the streets. And it reminded me of my favorite Fast and Furious movie, which was the sixth one, which was set in Santiago, where there was this whole safe that they are carrying on. And maybe it's inspired from that, maybe it's not.
That just sounds terrible.
But I actually enjoyed it because it was so incredible. You know that's not going to happen. And you know, there are horses carrying this, and there's this whole building being dragged down the street. So I don't know, it has its fun parts. I really liked when they do find the trident. There's some cool CGI associated with it. I really like that piece. So it's an entertaining enough movie. I wouldn't ask somebody who has bought their ticket to tear it up.
Okay.
You know, go ahead and watch it, but really,
don't just run out and watch
it. Just let it die.
And that sounds like a summing up. Yazdi, do you want to score?
Yeah, I would give it a 6 out of 10. It's entertaining. I cannot deny that. It's very entertaining. And it has the touch of somebody who has put in some thought to it. I think it was a good idea to bring in a new director. And to answer your question, Gore Verbinski made the first three films. The fourth one was directed by someone else. And now the fifth one, they gave the reins over to these Norwegian guys. So I like that they've brought some energy to this franchise. But enough already.
And Yazdi said that that's a really nice way to put it. It does have some energy in it that was totally lacking in number four. Yeah. So I give it that. For me, this franchise started in 2003. Come on, 14 years. 14 years. Stop. Stop it now. Better than four. Definitely not better than one and two. Stop the madness. 6 out of 10.
Ouch. Well, 2 sixes isn't bad. I mean, it's been slayed in the press, which I'm you know, surprised given the fact that both of you somewhat enjoyed it. You're just over it, if it sounds like.
Yeah.
I mean, but really, I was watching the audience and they had a great time. People had a great time. And as we were all walking out of the cinema, people just kept saying, that was a great movie. I had such a good time. Especially the people in costume had a wonderful time.
Yeah. So I resent.
So go in costume. Go in costume.
So I resent the fact that people are writing this movie off as being a bad film. I don't think it's a bad film. I think it's just a film that's not necessary. So
if this was the second one in the franchise, you would receive it a lot
more.
We
would all be extolling its virtues. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Movie number two of the week then is Wonder Woman. So I think Rashmi,
named after me.
You keep saying. I'm like looking for your tiara somewhere. Your what were those things? Ankle.
It's wrist? By the vacuum cleaner. What are they?
Bracelets.
Bracelets. Thank you. Oh God, I couldn't think of the word. Yeah, your bracelets.
My tiara and my bracelets are with the vacuum cleaner. Okay, so Wonder Woman. I'm super excited to hear what the three of you think of this. An Amazon princess played by Gal Gadot finds her idyllic life on an island occupied only by female warriors interrupted when a pilot, who's played by Chris Pine, crash lands nearby. After rescuing him, I like that, she learns that World War I is engulfing the planet, and she vows to use her superpowers to restore peace. So this is directed by Patty Jenkins. It's written by Alan Heinberg, Zack Snyder from 300, Jason Fuchs. Of course, it's based on the DC comic that we talked about earlier. And I'm excited to hear about this because Wonder Woman, growing up, the TV series with Linda Carter, was one of my favorite TV shows.
Yeah.
Can I just add a couple of things to the intro there? Because, I mean, Patty Jenkins was known for the movie Monster. And that's, I think, the only thing that she has directed in terms of full-length feature. Or
I think she's directed.
Has she done more?
Yeah.
But that was certainly it's kind of an interesting choice of director for a franchise as big as this. There's been lots of statistics thrown around by this movie. It's the most expensive movie made this year. It's over $100 million budget. It's the most expensive movie directed by a woman this year. It's the first superhero movie directed by a woman. So it's very interesting kind of set of facts about that.
And you were right.
And it's running at 93%.
It started at 97%. Yeah. And you were right, by the way, this is only her second movie directing. She's done a lot of television, but this is only her second movie after Monster, which was nominated for an Oscar and did win Charlize Theron her Best Actress trophy.
Okay, so is that, oh my God, is that Oscar love for this potentially? Who's going to start? Come on, Joe, why don't you go first?
Let's throw Gary under the bus here.
Gary is our guest enough.
Just working with the Patty Jenkins as a director, interestingly enough, she was the second director for this movie. The first one was another woman.
Okay.
Who was known for, I don't remember her name, but she had done some Game of Thrones episodes. So
they were very keen to have a female director.
People were very excited about her. And after seeing this movie, I can't imagine what the first choice of a director would have brought, considering what Patty Jenkins brought out and the actors in general. The movie I thought was an incredible movie. Just how she's in, I think, still going with Patty on this one, because we're like this. she is an actor's director. She knows, I think, I saw just watching Gal Gadot throughout the entire movie, the expressions on her face, it was just so exciting to watch during this movie. And I'm going to be very careful not to do too many spoilers but just the innocence of her from the beginning, and as she's getting contaminated by man's world, as she's introduced to it, and you went on that journey with her, and it was through her facial expressions or through her just her general acting. Do I think she's going to get an Oscar for this? No, but it was some really, really good acting.
And Gary, I know that you and I had talked about the fact that you had watched the trailers avidly leading up to the movie. Did the promise of the trailers play for you?
Well, I stopped watching the trailers because in this day and age, they just, you're afraid that you're going to see the whole movie. So,
right.
What's interesting is that the trailers drew a lot of negative, including for myself. I try not to watch trailers, but this movie was heavily marketed as being the next big DC movie. And I think the trailers have been pretty much constant for the last 6 months, I think, in theaters. But they drew a lot of negative attention to the movie. So, I certainly, for one, was put off by the trailers. But before we go into my thoughts, Yasti, what did you think of the movie?
I think if somebody asked me to direct Wonder Woman, I would run 100 miles away, because this has been a property which has been tried now for 5 decades. They've been trying, right? There have been umpteen number of Superman movies, umpteen number of Batman movies, and somehow, Wonder Woman, they've not been able to bring it to the screen because of, misogynistic reasons, commercial considerations. They never thought a female superhero movie could do it. So the very fact that you're taking something which has so much history, which has, the whole Wonder Woman television series, which is very beloved, I would run away from it because it's such a high bar to cross. And I think the very fact that this movie not only crosses that bar, but exceeds it substantially is cause for quite some celebration. I mean, don't get me wrong, this is not a perfect film. It is far too long, in my opinion, and not everything works. But the pieces that work just work amazingly. I mean, I had goosebumps at one point. You just see things here that you don't normally see in superhero movies. So I think it's quite something. It's an achievement.
And that's not just the costume, Yasti, that you're mentioning.
Correct.
Okay. So, Joe.
So, yeah, I mean, Rashmi, you were out of town. We missed the screening. We saw David Blaine in theater in San Diego, which is something we should talk about at some point because he was amazing. But so was this movie. I went to see this last night, and I went with some mixed feelings because I had seen the trailers and I thought the movie looked silly. The fact that the DC franchise to date has been a disappointment. I'm a fan, self-confessed fan of Man of Steel, but I accept that movie's many, many flaws. I think the Batman versus Superman that we saw last year, Zack Snyder's terrible effort, was was such a disappointment to somebody like me who's a big fan of, you know, the Nolan Dark Knight series. So going into this one, having seen the trailers and then starting to see some of the positive press coming out about this movie, I was really kind of quietly excited about it. So as the others, I thought this was a terrific superhero movie. I think there are lots of things that this movie does incredibly right. And it started to kind of shed some light, for me at least, on why a lot of superhero movies go wrong. And I think in particular, the thing that this movie does so well is the hero's journey. And I think it's a classic kind of movie arc, story arc. But the way that we see this character deal with the world as it is, from a place of naivety, and then go through that growth, and then still want to win things over with the theme of love, is purely, it sounds so horribly corny, but it's done brilliantly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little nitpicks about this movie, including the ridiculous, overly CG finale. The fact that we are with this character on this journey as she goes through, Gary, you made a very good point about, I think you said about the way that the movie kind of shows her face a lot. You can spot the feminine director behind the camera here, because she doesn't look at Gal Gadot, who is kind of impossibly beautiful, but she doesn't look at her in the way that a male director would have looked at her. You look at her through her face. You see her emotions. You can see her personal dealing with some of the evils in the world through her face, through her facial expression. And the camera lingers on her face, but it's not, it's through a very emotional place, from a very emotional place. I loved it.
So just let me ask you a question. So one of the things I really complained about when we watched Batman versus Superman, other than that film, I found awful, was the fact that Wonder Woman is in that movie, and I was so disappointed that her role was minuscule, and it felt like she was just there to be a character standing on the side. So is there a link between Superman versus Batman and this movie, or are they completely unrelated?
I would say there's a link, and you understand how she was behaving in that movie and why she was behaving the way she was in that movie. And it's just, I'm struggling not to give too much away.
That movie was set after this one. This is an origin story for Wonder Woman.
This movie was set 100 years after.
Yeah, right? 100 years later.
100 years after that.
She's actually just really coming out of seclusion during the Batman versus Superman movie, where she's just ready to go back and defend the world and defend good in the world. And so we don't know that when we see her in BVS. But we do now know through this journey what tainted her and what disappointed her in coming into the man's world. And, you know, we broke this down act by act. So when you start off in these beautiful shots of, I think it was filmed in Greece or somewhere, of Themyscira, the islands where all the Amazonians are, you get some great history of why they exist. And it was, they were, it's all about with the gods and how the Amazonians were there to help man fight. Mm-hmm. The antagonist in this movie, the ultimate one, is Ares, the god of war. And how that's why they were on this earth and why they were on Themyscira. And then what the whole purpose of Diana Prince is. And so it's just fascinating. I love the journey.
Is it true to the source? Because I'm really, yes, not, you know, what I know of Wonder Woman is from that 80s TV show, yeah, which I don't remember much about, other than it felt at the time kind of tongue in cheek and a little cheesy. Whereas,
so she's, you know, had this multiple
introduced
origins.
A lot of kind of comic book lore. In
here. I mean, Wonder Woman is 75 years old, and just as a side note, the character creator is from San Diego. Is San Diego based?
Ooh, go San Diego.
Who does her filler? She looks good for 75.
So that character is 75 years old. So obviously she's had multiple origins, but they've kept true to where she was supposedly shaped out of clay, and Zeus gave her life, And so that part was integrated into the movie. And then the acts were very predictable. You knew she was going to have her island and she was going to be introduced to the man's world and then the big showdown. But the journey, my goodness, no man's land. Yep. Unbelievable. When she's walking through there and when she finally makes her decision that she can't fight this, or she has to fight this. She can't hold back anymore. That scene is a classic. I don't think you've never seen that in any other superhero movie, and it's instantly going to be a Hollywood classic, that particular coming out scene. I think it was better than the actual third act, piece.
So there's...
go ahead.
There's a lot in this, you know, I don't know. There are those who are very, very familiar with the Wonder Woman mythology, and there's others who might not be. And if you just look at it purely from and I'm one of those, I'm not very familiar with the mythology. You know, if you just look at it from a superhero perspective, there's stuff here which could go horribly wrong, right? We're talking about gods, and we're talking about, you know, and I'm not giving anything away because you find out about this in the first 10 minutes, but she was made out of clay.
Come on.
And, and
it makes me roll your eyes.
This could have gone so campy, so quickly, like so bad, and considering that material, the movie is very sharp and polished and sincere. It's very, very, very sincere. I mean, the movie it reminded me most, actually, is of the Captain America movies. Yes. Which it has that same tone of
Winter Soldier
goodness, and authenticity and old-fashioned honor. It has all of those in it. Considering all of those, this could have fallen flat on its face, and it just never, ever goes into camp. It never seems insincere. And it keeps a straight face, and it allows the audience to keep a straight face, and that's quite remarkable.
Yeah, no, I was listening to a review of this movie, and one of the things that it had an interview with Gal Gadot as part of it. Is it Gadot or Gadot? I don't know. She's Israeli, so it's not. I want to say it the French way and drop the T.
Yeah, I say Gadot as well. Target.
Like Bridget Bardot.
But one of the things that she said that, you know, her and Patty Jenkins deliberately did here was drop the cynicism. You know, let's have an earnest superhero movie that doesn't play it for laughs and doesn't play it for, you know, heaviness. Let's just have, and you know, apparently they took a lot of inspiration from the original Superman movie, the Richard Jenkins. Mm-hmm. It's intended to be kind of just a genuine story about somebody who is learning about the world. You know, there's this kind of naivety about the character as she enters the real world, so to speak, the men's world. The fact that, again, I think the female direction is so important to kind of the way that we look at this character and the way that we look at there's an island full of beautiful warrior women. You know, give that to imagine what would have happened if you'd given that to Zack Snyder,
right?
Yeah. We would have had boobs and leotards, and you know, I mean, it would have looked awesome, but it would have been so horribly throwaway. Instead, we have these fierce, strong women. Robin Wright has a very tiny part in this movie, but boy, does she nail it! And and immediately it sets the tone for what this world, this universe, what this character is. You know, it's not necessarily a feminist movie in any way, because I think, you know, she is kind of that naive girl. you know, that I think the feminists among us might get annoyed by. You know, she does fall for the first man that she sees, kind of thing. But it's the fact that the movie plays that straight. Right, it's the fact that the movie doesn't. It's you know, the Lois Lane Clark Kent story. It's really quite silly in terms of a romance, but it worked back in the day, and I think this movie works for many of the same reasons.
And how is Chris Pine?
He's great.
He's excellent.
So charismatic. I mean, the chemistry between those two incredible. And then there was the secretary.
Oh yeah,
who was hysterical.
Amazing. Yeah,
DC had to get this right. It's always Marvel versus DC. Marvel can be comedic and lighter, and DC has this history of being very, very dark.
Brooding.
And it seems like they learned their lesson, and they introduced some comedy here. This had everything. It had the darkness, but it was so balanced with constant above average, not average. Just so many jokes. But still, the holding that that sincerity and the whole coming of age type of defending and saving mankind. It was just, it was extremely balanced, I thought.
I think, not to overstate things, but I think when you look at the, you know, the poster for the movie, the only big recognizable name there is Chris Pine, right? Nobody knows Gal Gadot. So it's kind of rather brave of him to play second fiddle in a movie where, you know, he's not the superhero. He is the superhero's love interest. And I think he as much steals the movie as... And we haven't talked... I have lots to say about Gal Gadot, but he really, I mean, he's always very charismatic. He's always very understated. He never seems to be working hard in any of his movies. But he really does, you know, he really does comedy very well. I mean, there's you know, this whole interaction between him and Wonder Woman. It's like one of those old Casablanca kind of romances. Yeah. It's like almost something out of the 40s or the 50s. And it only works if you have good leads, if you have good people. And again, remember, this is a guy, Chris Pine, who almost got nominated for an Oscar last year for Hell or High Water, playing a bank robber. So, you know, good for him. He's not the pretty boy, but he's really like bringing it on. And this is a very difficult role. Again, I think he could have kind of tried to muscle his way into this story. And he provides perfect support. And he actually provides the emotional arc for the movie. Not to give anything away, but, you know, it's quite something.
You said that perfectly, because I think the fact that he doesn't try to steal scenes, the fact that he yes-ands everything that the Wonder Woman character is doing without, again, trying to be, you know, the hero. I mean, he has so many heroic moments, but we never see him as kind of overshadowing her in any way.
I can say with all the Wonder Woman that we've seen growing up in cartoons and everything, the magic lasso, right?
Yeah.
The lasso of truth. Mm-hmm. That scene where they used it on him.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought. Because
he's so good in it.
And so how he was struggling and he's divulging that he's a spy. But I never thought it would burn. You never thought how it's just it's a lasso around you, but just they bring it to life. Mm-hmm. I had never thought of how that must feel when and evoking the truth out of one.
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't. In fact, I'll admit to not knowing that it was the lasso of truth.
Yes.
So I thought it was just kind of a laser whip, some kind of like, you know, pain inflicting head chopping weapon.
Which is good, because I think the movie said, okay, you have the diehards who have been following her, but then there's people who aren't as familiar, and they explained it. It wasn't just implied.
It was very well explained,
So, and people learned things. So,
can we talk about Gal Gadot?
Please? Go ahead. Yeah.
Were there Easter eggs? Any Easter eggs?
Well, I didn't see them,
not for the non-fans.
Well, this is a hard one. Yeah, so
I think maybe there were references that you would have picked up on.
So the ice cream cone,
yes,
that is a nod to the New 52 when they reintroduced and relaunched the entire DC Comics. Part of her series was a scene with a little girl with ice cream. Mm-hmm. So that was a nod, but it was very hard to do that in this show because it's 100 years earlier, so it's hard to see some of that. I'm sure there are, and I probably didn't catch them, and maybe I'll catch them tomorrow. I'm hoping to go again, but
really,
oh yeah. Well, Mark hasn't seen it yet, so I have to.
Let's talk about Gal Gadot. I think this movie is Gal Gadot. Wonder Woman is Gal Gadot. I mean, I not to make too much. We've only seen her like in really awful parts before in the Fast and Furious movies, but. God, talk about good casting here. I mean, she is there in every scene of the movie. Maybe she's not there in three scenes of the movie, but she's in every scene of the movie. The camera just loves her. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I was just like, the camera, it's just framed beautifully. And like you said, it's not a lecherous look. There's a classicality to her face. I mean, I can see her be like the new Angelina Jolie. I mean, she has that... You know, that
she,
strength
in this
and
movie,
that face.
She is ridiculously and impossibly beautiful. I mean, it's not in a... It's really... I struggle for words.
It's almost a pure, there is a purity to it.
Yes.
And you know, again, you know, this one scene that you talked about earlier, which is a classic scene, it might be a classic scene where she comes out for the first time in her full, you know, garb. And it's like she's at the enemy lines and nobody wants to fight the Germans because they will just kill you. And she says, I cannot take this anymore. That's the kind of stuff which people laugh at in screens if you don't do it well.
Yeah.
It's a very risky thing to do, you know, watching some superhero saying, I'm going to go out there. But it gave me goosebumps because she does it so right. And I don't know what it is. It's a combination of good direction, acting, whatever. Yeah. But it just works. And I think a lot of it is because of her and how she embodies this character. And I think by virtue of the fact that the movie is set 100 years ago, the script and this director and this actor allows for a lot of very quiet commentary about women in a man's place. Because, you know, even at that time in Britain and elsewhere, a woman wasn't allowed to be part of, you know, the political circuit. A woman wasn't allowed to be do this, and a woman wasn't allowed to do that. And without getting militant about it and almost being humorous about it, it does a lot of commentary. I mean, it really gives you a sense of what it is to be, what it might have been to be a strong person of the female gender in a man's world. And again, even as I'm saying it, it sounds corny, but it's done very well.
And the music.
The music's very good, yeah.
And part of that scene was the music. That's her theme song.
Is that?
Which, you know, it builds up and builds up. And all of us who have been waiting for this Wonder Woman movie for a very long time, and we got teased with that music from BVS in that movie. And that was, I think everyone loved that part of that movie, was her crazy theme. If you have it, you should plug it in. Is that kind of
screaming guitar thing?
It's a wah, wah, wah. Yeah. So it's amazing. And so I think that's the second character.
Where did that come from? Did that come from the TV show?
No, that's original from BVS.
Okay. Because I didn't recognize it. I remember the din, Wonder Woman.
No.
Remember that?
And no cameos. So I thought they might slip a few in. They stayed true to this is an introduction of Wonder Woman. You might see it in the second one because I do think there will be a sequel to this. But
oh, no.
So the next one on the already, books is actually the Justice League.
Well,
the next movie is actually the Justice League.
Yeah.
But they have confirmed Wonder Woman 2, and Patty Jenkins will be at the helm.
Oh, good.
And it will be set in contemporary times. So that's all they've said to date. So that gives, maybe that's a spoiler. She doesn't die at the end, Rashmi, just so that you...
Well, she's a god.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, so sum this up.
No.
can't we talk about this for another hour?
I think we could.
Sure, I'm going to sign off.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of things that I didn't like. I mean, I think the movie is far from perfect. There are a little bit of clunky dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I think as much as I admire the performance that Gal Gadot put in here, I think she was directed extraordinarily well. I think the director overcame perhaps some of the actress's weaknesses by drawing out certain emotions through editing. There's a lot of slow motion in here. And I think that's done in particular so that we can focus on the world through her eyes. But as an actress, I think she had a couple of clunky lines here and there. I think she's easily outclassed by some of the other people around her. Chris Pine, to some extent, even though he tried very hard not to steal scenes. Robin Wright and the woman who played her mother.
Connie Nielsen.
Yeah, who I thought was superb as well. The other thing that really, really bugged me was this insistence on having this grand finale.
Yeah.
This is not a movie about villains, but, you know, they kind of throw in the villain towards the end as kind of this huge, you know, the godlike fight, the god fight. And at that point, it kind of turned into Man of Steel again. The jumping around and the kind of clumsy CG. It kind of took me out of the moment because I did all of a sudden see her not as human. I saw her as this computer generated thing. Mm. And that really bugged me because the movie had been so perfect up to that point. I mean, the no man's land scene is beautifully done with, you know, very athletic performance by Gal Gadot or her stunt woman or whatever it is. And then suddenly we get this, like, you know, crash, bang, jump, you know, Ant-Man, boing, boing, kind of elastic band type woman jumping around. I was like, damn it. you got this far and now you messed it up. But that, you know, it was kind of a little bit of an irritation to me.
Yeah, the end was just torturous. I mean, there was this big epic showdown between her and the bad guy, and it just goes on and on and on. They should have just, you know, they should have let it go. And also there is one scene where I think it's forwarded in time. It's frame forwarded, and it just looks jerky. It looks very CGI like. There's only one other thing I will say is I do want to talk about the production design. A lot of this movie is set in Europe. It's set in Belgium. It's set in Germany, and there's this wonderful scene where you know, snow falls and this outside of this little Belgian bar or cafe. Again, this can be so cliched. It can be so, this is the stuff of cliche, but the movie somehow makes it seem very authentic. That's really good production design. It's really good to believe that you have created something which could have existed at that time and not a replica of it. So it, you know, in fact, I found the middle part of the movie quite something, you know, and I'm glad the movie didn't toss its hat to being more in contemporary times, and it just completely, it says, no, this is the origin story, we're going to stick with this. So good for them.
And the costume designer was Lindy Hemming, who also was the costume designer for Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight.
Okay.
Talent to spare.
Yes. Yes. So now we can summarize.
Can we wrap it up? All right.
Wrap Gary. It up.
Oh.
Okay. You want me to go?
Yes.
Sure. Oh boy, I feel it's not quite a 9 out of 10 simply because I think it has a couple of missteps which bugged me. But I think to give it an 8 would be extremely unfair. I think this is for me a real revelation in superhero movies. I mean, I feel like it's earnest. It's terrific. It's buoyed by a terrific direction and a wonderful lead. So I'm going to give it a 9. To hell with the nitpicking today, because I really enjoyed the hell out of it. And Rashmi, I'm a little anxious that we're building it up a bit too much for you, because it's not the next, it's not the Second Coming. I think it's just a well executed superhero movie. But I think in part our reaction is because the other DC movies have been horrible, and you know, when you go in with low expectations and you get a good movie, it makes it feel like a great movie. I don't think it's a great movie that will stand the test of time, but I think it's one of the better superhero movies that I've seen in recent years. It knocks the pants off something like Logan.
Gary.
So I think this movie is very appropriate for the times we're living in now. Mm. And it's all about evil taking over and just trying to somehow eliminate it. That, as well as what I said before, I've Wonder Woman has been a part of my life growing up, has been actually a role model in some cases. This is a movie for not just women to go to, for everybody to go to. I think it's going to be an instant classic. It moves right to the top of any DC superhero movie, and there's a long distance between number two. So I like you said, it's the superhero movie, but it's more than that in some cases. So Oscar worthy, I don't know. But I would give it a 9 as well. 9 out of 10. CGI is the only thing that's holding me back from a 10. Wow. I think there were some instances where it was clearly obvious was like, in some of the fight scenes that it was a animated.
So 9 and a 9, yes, D.
Yeah, I mean, I hesitate to make this movie, although I enjoyed the life out of it. And I think it's incredible what this movie has achieved, especially in light of daunting odds. I mean, this is not a straightforward story. This is a story with big landmines at every step where it could have gone 100 ways wrong. So in light of all of that, you know, it's quite incredible. And, you know, Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot really have come up with doing something. I think they've brought, who knew that you needed a female perspective to the superhero franchise to kind of give it more weight. And I also like the fact that the movie at many times reminded me of being a child and reading a comic book. In fact, a lot of the slow motion pieces look like panels from a comic book. So that's again,
that's
something
a great
else.
Point. Nancy, yeah.
But it has its faults. It's too long. I didn't care for that ending at all. I'm going to give it a very, very stingy 8 out of 10, knowing that it'll probably go up to 9 later on. But again, to kind of continue with what Gary said a little bit, and I hate to be political, but I think, you know, especially now where a lot of, you know, women's rights are being taken away and healthcare is being taken away and, you know, I'm sorry to stand on my soapbox here, but I think this movie is important for people to kind of be reminded of, you know, how the world has treated women and how we look at women with strength, you know, and how we treat that. So I think it's almost required viewing from that perspective. So I'll leave it at that.
One of the things I heard earlier today was there was a guy who, you know, the movie at the beginning, it's an origin story. So we see, you know, Diana Prince as a little girl. And, you know, the fact that she's this bold little girl who's not affected by expectations of what she should be. She wants to be strong. She wants to be a fighter. She wants to be, you know, powerful. And, you know,
a god killer.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think it has a message in there as well. So, yeah, again, Rashmi, let's temper your expectations here. This is, you know, a good movie. We, you know, just want to make sure when you see it, you're not expecting, you know, something like the Dark Knight, because it's not on that level.
Yeah, it's by no means. Yeah, I don't think. I think it's just
Gary's sending knives my direction.
But I think it's just a simple superhero movie done well.
Yeah.
Think, all the little pieces are done well, but you shouldn't think of it as...
Think Superman.
Yeah,
I mean, I think
the first Superman.
It's most like that movie
Superman.
In tone.
The
original
No, the
Superman?
First
original.
One with Christopher Reeve.
Not Man of Steel.
Oh, okay.
Christopher
original,
Reeve Superman
yes.
By,
yes,
by Richard Donner.
Love.
It's got that same lovely kind of earnestness.
Mm. Right.
Okay. So, let us know what you think of Wonder Woman. And the DC franchise in general. I've got mixed hopes for the Justice League. Is that Snyder again?
Yes. Yeah, we're back to Snyder.
Oh, damn it.
Well, so. It's Snyder and Joss Whedon who's had to jump in because of some...
personal. That's
right.
Interesting.
Personal. Snyder had to...
But yeah. It's really the post-edit and any type of reshoots. It's a Snyder film
okay.
That we'll be seeing. Yeah, the bar has been set very high right now, and DC needed this.
Yeah,
they
sure.
Needed this, but...
So, Gary, thank you for going, because I think you did this podcast way more justice than we would have done without you.
Yeah, it's probably the longest one we've had. Okay. But thank you for inviting me and letting me go.
We like to yabber on about, especially when it's a big movie like this. This is a big movie, right? This is the summer, you know, really in full swing. So, yeah, I'm, thank you for your insight and your DC-ness. Mail at moviewallace.com, twitter.com/moviewallace, facebook.com/moviewallace, instagram.com/moviewallace, where I will post this picture. I always promise to do that and never do. So our Instagram feed will include a picture of our studio setup today, which is really kind of duct taped together with Rashmi being away from us. So
it's lovely.
Yeah, well, it feels like you're here, Rashmi.
I feel like I'm there.
Do you feel like you're with us?
I feel like I'm sitting as the fourth member on the table. Yeah.
Yeah, I love technology. All right. Until our next episode, it is too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me.
And me as well.
Woo!